This is Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Eric Thiel. Welcome to another live session. Today, we are backstage at the Rogue Theater in Grants Pass, and my guest is none other than Ani DeFranco.
Hi there.
Hello.
Nice to talk to you.
It's wonderful to finally meet you.
Yeah.
Congratulations on a plethora of things that are part of your career. You have been a central artist for the public radio community, the AAA community for 25 years now,
really?
Something like that. Yeah.
I think so.
Well, you've put out
That's nice.
Darn near 20 records.
I sure have.
Not counting compilations.
No lack of trying. I'm trying to make myself central to something.
We were talking just before we came on the air that in 1990, I was just getting into college radio for the very first time, and your albums were just starting to come out. Mm. And at the time, when your music arrived on the scene, you were kind of hitting people over the head with a sound that nobody else was doing at the time. It was emotional, it was edgy, it was aggressive. Mm. Were there musical icons of yours early on that helped create that sound of yours that you had? Because it sounded so unique right out of the gate.
Mm. Well, I guess maybe I didn't have examples for that sound that you're talking about that I was following. I certainly had teachers, you know, and a community that I came from and things that picked up and emulated. But I think those were more in terms of, you know, I came up in the folk world, the folk underground, you know, and I, so, you know, this is a community that's very indie, mm-hmm. you know, it's all independent promoters, labels, you know, there's a lot of politics in the songs, in the arts, you know, it's community-based music / activism, you know, so in that way, there was my template, you know, for the career I designed for myself. But in terms of the sound, I think I was just, it was coming right from my spleen to anyone who would stop and listen.
You first started playing out when you were really young.
Yeah.
Like still early teens, mid teens.
Well, actually I started playing out in bars in Buffalo when I was nine.
Nine. How does that even work?
Extremely underage. Yeah. Well, first of all, it's the 70s at this time. So there is not so much concern, you know, it's before Mothers Against Drunk Driving and what, you know, all of these, you know, things coming to bear about having underage people and alcohol in the same room. So I was able to follow my friend Michael Meldrum, who was a singer-songwriter in Buffalo, New York, where I grew up. And I befriended him at the age of nine at the guitar shop where I got my first guitar. And we just instant connection. Instantly hit it off. And a little odd, you know, to have a 30-something-year-old man and a, you know, and a little girl hanging out. But that's exactly what we did. I mean, we went thrift shopping. We went busking. We hung out. I played with him at his gigs. You know, he taught me how to be a songwriter, really, this fella, Michael. So,
if we heard a recording from those years when you were 9, 10, 11 playing at bars, would we know it was you?
I wonder. The thing I remember hearing every time I sang was, whoa, you have a very big voice for a little girl, you know? So yeah. I think already right out the gate, I was just all about slamming sound into people's faces and see what bounced and what stuck and what fell.
You have talked at one point about some of that sound, that really percussive attacking sound, and that it came about because you were in smoky bars.
Yes, yes.
People weren't really paying attention. So
right.
You had to hit them musically as much as mm-hmm. you could with an acoustic guitar.
Yeah, and not just spank a guitar as hard as you can, but also I think dynamic. I think my music, one of the main elements of it, I feel, is dynamic. You put something very loud next to a silence or something very quiet, or you have a lot of contrasts. In terms of dynamics. And that is totally something I learned from trying to capture people's attentions in bars over the years. You know, when you're like a solo singer-songwriter in the corner, you know, and nobody cares, and why should they? So, you know, if you strum really loud and then suddenly there's a hole of silence, everybody's conversation hangs in the air. And suddenly everybody notices. And then if you can, you know, then the job is to hold their attention. But dynamics, I think, is something that was very much a survival skill. Mm.
You were out on tour for seemingly year after year after year, almost 15 years out regularly touring, and at some point developed a pretty bad case of tendonitis in your wrists. And were you able to eliminate it entirely, or is it now that sort of background thing that's always on your mind?
Background thing. Yeah.
Do you have to avoid some of those earlier songs?
I did at my most injured.
Yeah.
You know, it was affecting my set list.
That's a drag.
It was very hard, you know, when the thing that heals you is also very painful. You know, so it, yeah, it got very painful to play and very difficult, and I had to, take some time off touring. I think this was about 10 or 11, maybe a dozen years ago now. Yeah. It was the first time I took a break from touring, and it was because I was so injured. I couldn't continue, but that turned out to be a blessing in disguise, you know. I met this incredible shiatsu master named Ohashi, and I remember the first meeting I had of him, and I said, you know, I'm just desperate. My hands are locking up, and I can't do what I love. And the first thing he said is, oh, you are very lucky. Your body is telling you something. You have to listen, you know? And I was like, okay. And it was a long journey to figure out what my body was telling me. And but now that I am listening, you know, I have found a sustainable place, even though, you know, I'm not getting any younger and my arms still, you know, I ride that edge.
Yeah. Well, you have brought a couple of guitars to play a couple of songs for us. What is this first guitar that you've got?
Well, this is a tenor guitar. It's four strings. I keep it in an A-D-A-D tuning for some reason. That is not the correct tuning in any way. But I've written a lot of songs.
Newer stuff or older stuff on this kind of guitar?
Both.
Yeah?
Both.
What do you want to do for us first?
Well, that's a good question. Why don't I play you something from my last record? Let's see. How about Genie? Here's a tune called Genie. When I can hear something calling from somewhere deep and far, I'm a genie in a bikini coming out of a jar. I float out of myself and air to the divine, but it ain't all the time. Sometimes I'm stuck in my mind. But I'm sick of standing in the bread light with a hunger that just won't quit. Sick of mining my own hillside for gems to sell at market. Just gonna sit here like Buddha under this here Bodhi tree. Say goodbye to the game of what can I get for me. Yes, I just cried enough time. I wore out my other from somewhere deep and far. couldn't believe you found me. I couldn't believe my luck, 'cause I did my time.
That is Ani DeFranco live here on Jefferson Public Radio. One drunk beep.
Yes.
I would expect.
Oh, good. I'm glad you appreciated my self-censoring.
I would expect nothing less. A number of years back, Pete Seeger, and I am now paraphrasing a paraphrase, told you something along the lines of, if you want to get something done, you have to do it yourself, but more importantly, you have to do it now. Is that still something that you prescribe to? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think those are sort of my words. It's not something he said to me so much as something he showed, you know? And I think of him very often now because I have begun to write a lot of letters. You know,
like handwritten?
Yes. And that is what Pete would used to do with me when he needed me to show up for a benefit or get involved in something he was working on. He would write to me with his hand, you know, and over the years I received many letters from him, and you know, I watched his handwriting devolve over the years, but his mind was ever keen. He was really an astounding human being. I mean, as everyone knows, but up close it got no less remarkable. You know, I remember, you know, seeing him when he was in his 90s, you know, in the last few years at, for instance, his festival, you know, the Hudson Clearwater Revival there on the Hudson River. And, you know, he'd be holding court all weekend, I'm sure thousands of people coming up to him. And yet he was more lucid than I will ever be. You know, I remember this day, he's probably 93, I'm guessing, or 92 or something, not very many years ago. And he comes up to me and he says, "Ah, Ani, you know that benefit for Leonard Peltier that we were going to have in November? We're going to put it off at the..." I was just standing there thinking, first of all, how do you even know my name right now?
Yeah.
If I was you, I would be not so clear on it all. Anyway, so now I have these sort of political ideas that are burning in me, and I have been writing handwritten letters to people that I want to connect with, that I want to see if I can work with on these political ideas, and I have Pete in my heart when I'm doing so.
And these are people completely outside the musical world?
Yes. These are activists and writers, feminists that I would like to collaborate with. And anyway, yeah, there was just something about Pete's example. When he had an idea, when he would act on it immediately, and he would go directly to the source of what needed to be changed, or the source of the partnership that he needed to make in order to, you know, make that change. You know, he was very... His activism was immediate and it was personal.
Over the years of your records, your music has evolved and changed over time.
Yeah.
And if there was, I don't know that there's one succinct thing that you could say about the change to your music, but one thing that I have noticed is that there's more space in it than there used to be when you were younger. Miles Davis had a famous quote about it's not the important notes that you play. Yeah. It's the ones you don't play, right? Uh-huh, and yeah, your music indeed. Seems more contemplative now. There's more mm-hmm. space for it to go by with you as more of an observer. Mm-hmm. Did that coincide with motherhood, or was that a change that was just naturally evolving within you?
Yes and yes. Yeah. I think you're, yeah, you know, I mean, I think that each of us, maybe as we get older, becomes somewhat humbler, you know, and we learn, you know, when we are young, we're so convinced of our own perceptions or our, you know, and I don't know, at least for myself, as I get older, I get humbler, you know, I become a better listener. I understand, you know, sometimes it's almost an impediment, you know, when you look at everything from all sides, you know, it's harder to be, you know, marvelously confident like you are when you're young, you know, about your own side of things. But it's really terrific to leave those spaces and to listen into them and to learn. I think my children, you know, certainly taught me a lot of patience, you know. But I think even their father before them, I think that was the turning point for me, was finding him that I just wrote that song about, sung that song about, and sort of the dawning of unconditional love in my life. Mm. You know, it really helped me to relax about things. It's amazing.
You have historically not had a good time naming songs.
Yeah, right.
Is that getting any better? I mean, you've been at it for long enough.
Yeah, not so much.
Really?
You know, I'm not a, yeah, it's, I guess maybe my songs, they don't often have the one hook or the, you know, they're not sort of sing-alongy, chorusy kind of songs, so it's not obvious what they should be called.
Usually the two avenues are either the repeat in the chorus or the first line of the song, right?
Okay.
Those are the easy ones.
Yeah. See, I'm always pulling out what to me seems like the central concept, you know, which is just a word buried in there somewhere.
Hope.
Yeah, yeah,
something
really.
Like that. Ani DeFranco is my guest today live on Jefferson Public Radio. We are backstage at the Rogue Theater in Grants Pass. RighteousBabe.com is the web address to learn, if you don't already know, all about Ani. Will you play us something else?
Sure.
Same guitar or different?
I mean...
They're multiplying. You've actually got three of them in here now, right?
Watch me play them all at once. Well, let me play you one more on this, just because it has come to mind. Do I know how to play this song? I think so. It's another one from this last record. It's called Happy All the Time. But I should tell you, this song now comes with a little, like, footnote attached to it, which goes like this. When I say Isis in this song, I mean the goddess. Okay. Lest there be any confusion. Suffer did the Buddha, and suffer did the Christ, and suffer did Isis when mankind started to write, and through profound suffering shines enlightenment's light. So I'm grateful to this struggle. Yes, I honor their plight. But me, I'm just happy all the time. Yeah, me, I'm just happy all the time. And I know pain is a teacher, to be welcomed and not feared. Alas, pain is your ally, so embrace it while it's here. It's here to open up your eyes, here to make the way clear. At least that's what I've observed, at least that's what I hear. But me, I'm just happy all the time. cry. And greatness has a price. Just ask Abraham Lincoln, ask Miles Davis's wives. And I have great admiration for those that raise up mankind. But I'm afraid that great gift is not meant to be mine. 'Cause me, I'm just happy all the time. Yeah, me, I'm just happy all the time. Kind of in line with what we were talking about, you
yeah,
know, finding
absolutely.
Your humility. And
Ani DeFranco is my guest today live here on Jefferson Public Radio. Why did you move to New Orleans? I mean, after all those years being like the star of Buffalo,
yeah,
New
right,
York, right?
Right, big fish, little pond. you know, I love Buffalo, and you know, that's my hometown. But the minute I showed up in New Orleans, it was like, oh, there's places like this on the earth. You know, New Orleans is a musical epicenter of the globe. You know, it's the birthplace of jazz. It's a crossroads of many peoples and many countries, cultures, and it has deep, deep African roots, you know. And so, therefore, the music is just fierce and deep and wide there, you know. Some of the most amazingly transcendent musical offerings have sort of come out of New Orleans. So when I first started hanging out there, and it's still very much alive, you know, the spirit in New Orleans, the history, the richness, you know, the trains are still, you know, rambling down the tracks, and the streetcars are going by, and the horse-drawn carriages are clopping around the quarter, and it's like history is alive, and the music is still, you know, coming forth out of sort of the soul.
Hmm. Outside of your recordings, are there musical styles going on in New Orleans that you participate in that we would be surprised by?
Oh, well, I mean, I just sort of have become a part of the community, you know.
I mean, are you out there in like a second line doing that kind of stuff?
When I can, you
really?
Know. I have still a 2-year-old now, so I've been a little out of the loop, unfortunately, for a few years. But yes, I'm out there soaking it up anytime I can. Huh. You know, that's really why I moved there, was to just be living in a place where I could get fed, you know, as an artist.
I'm glad you said that, because I wanted to ask about, you know, outside of your own creation of music, what role does music play in your life? Are you a big consumer of other people's music? Do you listen to old classic recordings?
Yeah, geez. You know, I'm not, I don't buy a lot of records these days, you know. I guess, you know, it has to do with being a mom and being out of the loop, you know. But I do try to keep my ear to the ground, you know. I hear about who's shaking it up out there, you know. And but yeah, music for me has always been less of a commodity, I guess, just generally speaking, than something you do, you know, and something you go watch and other people do and participate in, you know. And I think that's something that my pal Michael, that I told you about in Buffalo, New York, he taught me early on. Music is a social act. You know, it's not a commodity. So I've always been really into it from that angle.
You've got all these possibilities for titles that go before Ani with Ani DeFranco.
Oh, yeah, right.
Performer, songwriter, mother, entrepreneur, activist, business owner.
Uh-huh.
How do you order those these days?
Uh-huh. I think writer is probably the top of the list for me. You know, I think that's, you know, where... And performer, you know, writer, performer, you know, and et cetera, you know.
What's an average year for you now out on the road? How many dates?
Oh, well, not so many. And once again, the kids, you know, I mean, I can basically leave my husband behind with the kids for about 2 weeks and then everything just starts on fire, you know. So I keep it to a pretty reasonable pace these days. But yeah, there's something about live performance, once again, that is just so exciting to me. So much, you know, it's interactive, you know, and there's so much going on beyond just the even the words being said or the notes being played. You know, there's whole other levels of communication occurring between, you know, the audience and myself that I find very fascinating, very compelling.
Hmm. There's one other thing I want to ask you about, and it's kind of near and dear to us here at Jefferson Public Radio, because about 10 years ago, our foundation purchased and raised money and restored an old theater and turned it into a performing arts venue. You have been behind a project of that sort in your hometown. Tell me about what has become, Babeville?
Babeville, that's right. Yeah, why not call an old 1870s cathedral Babeville? Hey, you know, it's friendly sounding.
Well, what was it originally, and then what did you do with it?
It was the United Methodist Church in downtown Buffalo. It's a beautiful old sandstone cathedral, you know, just a gorgeous building. And because it was a Methodist church, happily this beautiful stained glass is all just colors, you know, there's no gruesome images. This was a building that, you know, stones were falling from the facade onto the sidewalk. Bad in a city, really. Yeah. Not good. So they were going to demolish the building, which is what happens in our poor evacuated cities, you know, on the East Coast, such as Buffalo. So they're just sort of ripping the infrastructure away because of the economic problems. So Righteous Babe, my record company, which is based in Buffalo, has been involved since the beginning, really, in trying to preserve old buildings, you know.
Not just that one.
We've saved other buildings in downtown Buffalo. And this is work that my mother was an architect. And when I was young, she started a group called Women for Downtown, you know. And my mother, if she could, you know, sit you down, would wax poetic about cities and the meaning of cities as cultural centers, as centers of ideas and diversity and culture, and how important the city is for human consciousness, you know. So she was somebody that I learned a respect for old buildings, for history, for cities, very early. So that's been a part of my activism. Yeah, so this particular cathedral we saved from demolition. And it took years of sort of fighting the demolition of that building. And then we thought, wow, our karma is really wrapped up in this one. Let's buy it. Let's move in. Then we have the record company offices in the church house. And we have a big venue in the main sanctuary. We have a smaller venue in the basement called the Ninth Ward now, as a nod to New Orleans, my new home. And there's also an art gallery in there and a black box theater, all under the auspices of Hall Walls Contemporary Arts Center, which shares the building. Yeah, it's a real great little rebirth there in downtown Buffalo. And, you know, the whole neighborhood has kind of come up around it, which is a great feeling.
Congratulations. What a great project.
Likewise. Yeah. God's work.
Ani DeFranco is my guest today live on Jefferson Public Radio. We are chatting backstage at the Rogue Theater in Grants Pass. Will you play us one last tune?
Sure. Maybe I should play one of these other guitars we have. Let's see, what else from back in the day that...
Sure.
I mean, we could go way back. How about Fire Door? Fire door to four lips. none of which were mine. Kissing, tightened my belt around my hips where your hands were missing. Stepped out into the cold color high under the slate gray sky. Air was smoky and the streets were dry, and I was a joke when I said goodbye. And there were magazine quality men talking on the corner, French no less, much less of them than us. So why do I feel like something's been rearranged? You know, taken out of context, I must seem so straight and hurt. So big, it left a puddle of pus on my boy. And oh, when you and I are lying in bed, you don't seem so tall. Singing now because my tear ducts are too tight, and my mind is disconnected, but my heart is wired. Oh, my heart is wired. My heart is wired. Oh, yes, it's wired. And I make such a good statistic, someone should study me now. Somebody's gotta be interested in how I feel, just cause I'm here and I'm real. And oh, how I miss walking up to the edge and jumping in, like I could feel the future on your skin. Oh, how I miss substituting the conclusion to a confrontation with the I open the fire door. I open the fire door. Yes, I open. Now it's occurring to me that I should be playing this 1990 style back when you and I were first on the radio. How did that groove go? Something like this. It was like, right? Yeah. That's the original.
That is the original.
Right, yeah.
I remember that vividly, how that would
work. Yeah, I remember musicians in Buffalo that I was playing with as a young, you know, a teenager going, what? That's not a groove. What is that? That's some squirrel music.
It's an opposite of groove.
Yeah, right. Anti-groove.
This has been fantastic. Thanks for sitting down with us today.
Oh, thank you for your time.